Well, good morning and welcome. It's good to be here with you today. I have really enjoyed singing with you and praying to God with you. It's been a good thing, been very uplifting. So thankful you're here doing those things with me. We're doing those things together. I'm ready to read the Bible with you now. You ready to open your Bibles up and to read some of God's Word? It's so important to do that. Open your Bibles up to the book of Daniel. We're just going to read the entirety of Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, starting in verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his gods. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had the ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily ration of the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them, from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food, or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of the officials said to Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king who has appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. But Daniel said to the overseer whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. And let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food. And deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine that they were to drink and kept giving them vegetables. As for these 4 youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Then at the end of the days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. God had delivered his chosen people over to their enemy because they were repeatedly unfaithful to him. The last city to fall was the city of Jerusalem. God spared them longer than he did any other city, but it was just a matter of time for them as well. Now I want you to notice what is said in verse 2 of Daniel chapter 1 that we read just a minute ago. This was all the Lord's doing. It said there in verse 2 of chapter 1, the Lord gave Jehoiakim into the hands of the king of Babylon. The Lord is kind and merciful. The Lord, he is slow to anger and he is quick to forgive. But let me tell you something about the Lord's patience. It doesn't last forever. And God's people finally wore his patience thin. And in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, he came and attacked Jerusalem in a first of 3 waves of assault that would span a 20-year time period. And he brought back some captives to his capital city. And we read about the 4 most famous of those hostages that he brought back. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These were young men. These were likely teenagers, actually. And they were just of the most excellent quality. Now, verse 4, we read there, it said that they were good looking. They were full of wisdom. They were full of knowledge. They had understanding. Sorry, ladies, they just don't make them the way they used to, I know. But that's the type of young men these guys were. And an official took these young men and he prepped them. He primed them And he prepared them for a premium post in the royal court. They were going to serve in the king's palace. Now, after 3 years of this preparation, they were brought before King Nebuchadnezzar. And when he observed them with his own eyes, and when he heard them with his own ears, what they looked like and what they had to say, when he examined them, when he interviewed them, among all the interviewees, there were none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And he said once again in verse 20, in all the matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Let me ask you this morning, what do you think it was about these young men that was so excellent? When they were brought before him, he tested them, he examined them, and they blew him away. They were the cream of the crop. They were the 99th percentile. They were in that range. They were just the elite of the elite. What was it about these fellows that made them 10 times better than all of the wise men in his realm? I want to share some of my observations with you this morning, why I believe that was the case. We'll talk about a few things, why I think what made these men so much better, these young men at the start. First of all, we'll notice that a steward was appointed over them to teach them the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. You think about it. They were brought into a new land. These were noble-born Jews, and they were brought into a heathen land. They were speaking a different language there. They weren't familiar with the customs and the culture. Look, you got to learn the language. You got to know the customs if you're going to be much use to a king of a land. So part of their training in the literature was undoubtedly an education in all the popular myths of the time. Now, we read about those magicians and those astrologers in verse 20. And Daniel and his friends, they no doubt had a big heaping helping, an unhealthy dose of all that nonsense. Now, the first thing I'll have you notice that I think that made them 10 times better than the other people in the land, the wisest men in the land, is that they did not buy in to the popular tripe. They did not buy in to all the mumbo jumbo. They had the true wisdom of God. They had no need for all that garbage. Now, you think about it. When Nebuchadnezzar had that dream, remember that famous dream of that statue with all the different types of metals on that statue? And he sent for all his wise men of the land, all those conjurers, all those sorcerers. None of these wise guys could tell the king anything about the dream. Only Daniel could do that. Only Daniel could tell him the truth of what it meant and what was to come. And why was that? That's because Daniel had the true wisdom of God. And I want to tell you something, brothers and sisters in Christ, the same is true for us today. We have that wisdom readily at our access all the time when it comes to the Bible, when it comes to the living, breathing Word of truth. It is 10 times better than any of that junk you'll find on the bookshelves in the bookstores or in the libraries today. Now, if you take advantage of that wisdom, look, it doesn't do any good just sitting on your coffee table, right? If you actually open that up, if you read it, if you take it in, if you avail yourself of that wisdom, it will make your life 10 times better than your life would be without it. You'll be a better person 10 times over than any self-help book can make you, than any modern-day spiritualist or pop psychologist can make you. It's just going to make you a better person. All the insistence today from a lot of the gurus that we hear about being true to yourself, about accepting yourself the way you are, and loving yourself and just living your life to fulfill your own desires and to suit yourself, you know what that's going to do for you in your life? It's going to leave you lost and lonely. But what does the Bible tell us to do? The Bible tells us to be true to God. The Bible says live for God, live for Jesus. The Bible tells us that if we do that, He will make us the best person that we can possibly be. And we need to live to please Him. And if we do that, not living just to please ourselves, we're not just going to have ourselves. We're going to have God. And we're going to have the best that this world has to offer. And we're also going to have an eternity in heaven with Him. Now, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8 has this to say about godliness. 1 Timothy 4:8 says, bodily discipline is only of a little profit, but godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. You let God turn you into a godly person by absorbing His wisdom from His book. And I got to tell you, folks, it's going to make your life the best it can be here on planet Earth. And it's going to have promise for the life to come. And that's the only thing that can do that. That's the only book in the world that can do that. And you know what you're going to learn from this book? Instead of being all absorbed in yourself, you're going to learn to treat other people the way that you want them to treat you. And you're going to learn to love all people, even your enemies. The Bible tells us to do that. You're going to learn to pray for people, even though they treat you bad. And when you do that, when you employ these things, you're not going to be carrying around bitterness in your heart. You're not going to be carrying around animosity for your fellow man. You're not going to be all filled with resentment. You're not going to be seeking to exact vengeance on other people for the way they've treated you. It's just going to make your life so much better not to be burdened with all of that weight. And instead, in place of all of that negativity, you're going to have love and joy and peace, the peace that passes understanding. God just has so much better things awaiting for us if we'll just appeal to His wisdom and His knowledge. This is going to make our life 10 times better than without it. God promises us this wisdom. If you were to read in James chapter 1 and verse 5, you'll see it says there, "He who lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives all these things abundantly." He wants to give you this wisdom. And you should pray for it, but it is absolutely accessed through His Word. Now back to the story. One of the first orders of business when these four young men were brought into their training period was to change their diet from that of a common prisoner of war to that of a palace official. And verse 5 says that they were given a daily provision of the king's choice food and the wine from which he drank. And they were just going to fatten them up and strengthen them up and make them healthy. Now, this is the second reason why I think that Daniel and his friends were 10 times better than all the wise men in the realm of the king. And that is, verse 8 says, Daniel made up his mind. The New King James Version says he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. I want you to think about that. An incredible thing. Don't read past that too quickly without stopping to think about it. We're talking about 5-star restaurant quality food here offered to Daniel and his friends. We're talking about the stuff the king was eating and the king was drinking. And what did Daniel say and his friends agree with? They said, "We will not pollute ourselves with this stuff." Now, it's debatable what the nature of the food was. What was it about the food that would be defiling and polluting? Whether it was food that was considered unclean to Jews, which we know the Jewish people had very strict dietary laws, or whether maybe it was some meat that was offered to idols, or maybe it was both. Whatever the case was, they refused to eat this meat, this food, because it was going to defile them. You think about it. They would rather face the king's wrath than offend their conscience. They would rather deny their taste buds than to disobey God. I got to tell you, this took a lot of courage, and this took a lot of faith on their parts to do this. So Daniel convinced this chief eunuch to let him and his friends order from a different menu for 10 days, just as a trial period, just to eat vegetables and drink water and then to see what happens. Now, I want to suggest to you that Daniel and his friends show us that we can and that we should resist the defilements of the flesh. Not only that we can, not only that we should, they showed us how we can do that. First of all, I learned something with their refusal to eat that special food and to drink that wine. You think about it. Here this guy comes and says, "Look, here is the best food in all the land. You take this, you enjoy it, and you eat it." And they said, "No thanks, we're not going to have that. That's going to defile me." You know what that tells me right off the bat? It tells me that just because something looks better, or it feels better, or it tastes better, that does not always necessarily mean that it is better. It's quite often 10 times better just to say no to the things that make us feel good, to the things that taste good, to say no to the lusts of the flesh. And that's what these men were able to do. Don't you think they wanted just to tear into that food? It was the best stuff going, the best stuff in the land. But they understood the value of saying no to their lusts. Now you think about the lusts that we're exposed to today in our world with pornography, just all over the computer and in magazines, and that appeals to our lusts of the flesh. It entices us to fornicate and to commit adultery, even some people to commit homosexual acts. People ruin their lives with these kind of sexual defilements. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 18 through 20 says, "Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality or fornication sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God? and you are not your own. For you were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. These young men understood that God owned their body. Their bodies were the temple of the living God. They were not going to defile themselves with the sinfulness of this world. We need to learn that too. We need to understand that it's so much better to say no to the lust of the flesh than to cause so much pain and heartache, to bring disease and so many unwanted things with sexual sin. And that's just one example of that. You think about this as well. They understood that everything that glistened was not golden. Some things feel so good, but they hurt so bad. The same was true with the wine that the king gave them to drink. Now, you think about what is said in Proverbs 23 and verse 31 about wine. It sparkles in the glass. It goes down smoothly. But what does it do at the end? It bites like a serpent and it stings like an adder. And they understood that alcohol, drinking those spirits, we're not going to lift your spirits, that they were defilements of the flesh, and they stayed away from that. They refused to drink alcoholic drinks and they drank only water. Alcohol is a defilement of the flesh. You know what alcohol does for us? It doesn't strengthen us in any way. It might make us feel a little tipsy, a little fuzzy, a little good sometimes, but it actually weakens our spiritual resolve. And these men refused to drink it. Something else that we learn from these guys and their resistance to the defilement of the flesh, and that is, this is true, it's better to resist these defilements even if everybody else is doing it. Now these four young guys, they were in a foreign land, foreign culture, didn't have a lot of friends other than themselves, but they chose to be different. Now let me ask you, is it always easy to make that choice? Is it always an easy decision to stand out like a sore thumb, to look so different from your peers, your friends, your workmates, your schoolmates? Let me tell you something about these young men. I get the impression it didn't bother them at all. I get the impression they relished it. I get the impression they looked at it as a challenge. It's much more challenging. It's much more fulfilling not to just blend in and to look like everybody else and to act like everybody else. Let me ask you, do you find yourself doing that? Do you find yourself just going along with the crowd, being more of a follower than a leader, caving into the pressures of the flesh more easily because the people that you are running with or spending your time around with, because they so easily give into those things as well? Do you give in to temptation very easily? Let me tell you something about that. You know what? Any coward can do that. Just give in to the temptations and go along with the crowd. Any copycat can do that. It doesn't take any skill. It doesn't take much of a challenge at all just to go along with what everybody else is doing. Let me suggest something to you this morning. Don't be afraid to outshine all your peers. Don't be afraid to do that. These men weren't afraid to do that. They weren't afraid to be 10 times better than their peers. Let me tell you something. God likes that when we do that. God takes notice of that, and it's always better for us. And one more thing I want you to notice that Daniel and his friends taught us about withstanding the defilements of the flesh. You know what they taught us? They taught us that there's safety in numbers, that there's more courage with comrades, that it's much wiser to not stand alone if you don't have to do that. We're more likely to stand up strong if we're standing together with our brothers and sisters. Now, Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 12, one of my favorite verses of the Bible, has this to say about standing tough with other people. It says, if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. Now, I saw something at work the other day that really proved the truth of this proverb here. I found a little section of steel cable. I believe it was stainless steel. And it looks something like that picture up on the screen there. But when I look closer, I noticed that it was made of six or seven smaller cables twisted together. But then when I look even closer still, I noticed each smaller cable was made up of 10 to 15 individual strands of steel, little small gauge steel wires that looked to be no thicker than a piece of thread. And what I realized from that is, looking at that, I actually pulled these things apart, these strands apart, and I was holding that little strand of steel wire, and I realized, you know what, that little piece might hold 30 or 40 pounds of pressure before it snaps. That's pretty impressive. Try to do that with a piece of thread, can't do that. But when you mesh all of those together, when you co-mingle those and twist them around each other, you can actually lift hundreds upon hundreds of pounds, several hundred pounds of weight can be held by that cable that's twisted and meshed together. You know what that tells me about my ability to withstand the pressures of this world, to carry the weight that God places upon my shoulders sometimes and trying to do the right thing? That the more individuals I'm bound tightly together with in a closely knit unit, the better the chances are that I'm going to be able to pull that off. You want to defeat sexual addiction? You want to defeat a gambling addiction? You want to defeat drug and alcohol addiction? You want to defeat the defilements of the flesh? Call your brethren. Pick up the telephone when you're struggling and let them strengthen you. Because if they're fighting with us side by side, if we're not trying to do this alone, then we are much more likely to win than if we are trying to do that. You know what Satan wants to do? Satan loves it when we try to fight him all by ourselves. Did you know that? He knows he has much more of a chance to pick us off if we're sitting by ourselves. If we're just sitting like a duck on a pond, he has a greater chance to pick us off and kill us and weaken us and destroy us. We need each other. We need each other badly if we're going to defeat Satan. We need people to help carry our load. We need people to hold us up and strengthen us and hold us accountable, especially if we suffer with the defilements of the flesh. Well, back to the story. Lo and behold, after 10 days of this trial period of Daniel and his friends eating only vegetables and drinking only water, it says in verse 15 that they were inspected, and it said Daniel and his friends, they looked healthier than all of the rest of the young men who were eating the good food and drinking the wine. And then, after 3 years, when they were brought before the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, the same thing was true. There they were, looking stronger and more robust and healthier than ever. And that tells us that because they stood firm in their conviction, God saw them through. He took care of them. He made sure that everything went well in their lives. And the king examined them, and he just found them to be far superior to all the rest. So, it's all peaches and cream at that point, right, for these young men. It's all just honeysuckle and roses after that. Everything just goes swell for these gentlemen, right? No way. This is still Babylon. This is still planet Earth. There are still going to be problems faced by the most righteous and upright of people, and that's the case with these men as well. You know what happens to us sometimes when we show ourselves to be 10 times better than the average person? That just means Satan is sometimes going to turn up the heat 7 times higher in our lives, and that's exactly what happened to these young men. Now, in chapter 3, if we were to skip ahead, we read the story of how King Nebuchadnezzar made a huge statue of gold, 100 feet tall. And he made a decree that at certain times when music was played, that you had to fall down in front of this statue and worship it, or you're going to be killed. You're going to be thrown into a fiery furnace. That's said in verse 16. Now look, he was not playing around here. He said this was going to happen immediately. He took his idolatry and his allegiance to his country seriously. And Daniel's three friends, they were some of the dignitaries that were called to the dedication of this big gold statue. It's just a huge event. And can you guess what happened when Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, can you guess what they did when that music played and it was time to bow down before that statue? Anybody want to take a guess? They didn't do anything, did they? That's right. They just stood there. And look, we learn from that their names were changed. We see that the king changed their names, but their conviction hadn't changed one whit over the years. As a matter of fact, if it did anything, it grew stronger. They were even more godly than ever. Now, when the king heard that these men had denied him, they refused to bow down before the statue, it says in verse 13, he flew into a rage, and he commanded the three rebels be brought before him. And in verse 14, he asked them, is this true? Did you really do this? But he said, look, I'm going to give you one more chance. When you hear the music, verses 15 and 16, if you're ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Well, Nebuchadnezzar was getting ready to find out the answer to that question, wasn't he? Who the God was that would do that? You know what these men said to him essentially? King, don't waste your time striking up the band. Don't you worry about it, because look, we're not going to do it. In verse 16 they said, we have no need to answer you. I want to tell you that they weren't being disrespectful to the king there by saying that. They weren't saying, we're not going to answer you. What they were saying was, they were showing him, look, what you heard is absolutely true. We're not going to do it. So don't even worry about playing that music. And they said in verse 17, if our God chooses, he can and he will deliver us. But then in verse 18, but if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. We don't worship idols, period. I don't care what you do. I don't care how you try to force us to. They said God can deliver us. God might deliver us. But even if he doesn't deliver us, we are not going to do this. We would rather die than bow down to your God. Wow. What an awesome sense of conviction and courage that took from these young men. Would to God that we could get to this place in our lives as servants of the Most High God today. That we would rather pay the ultimate penalty of death than to give in to sin. That's the way these young men looked at it. I'd rather be true to God than have the best in this world. As a matter of fact, you can strike me dead. I'm not going to turn my back on my commitment to my Father in heaven. What a great example. Let me ask you, you think you could have done that? Do you think you could have said no to the king? I'm not so sure I could have. But you know what they told us here? You know what they taught us here? We can. We can resist Satan's temptations. We can resist the defilements of the flesh if we'll just get serious about our faith like these young men were. Well, we know the story, right? The king had them thrown into the furnace. He was so enraged, it says in verse 19, that he cranked that furnace up 7 times hotter than he would have normally. In verses 19 through 25, it tells the story of how the guards who had bound those 3 men up to throw them into the furnace, that they were actually killed. The poor, unlucky souls who were chosen to act out this would-be execution, it turned out to be their own execution, didn't it? And then, in verse 26, King Nebuchadnezzar called the 3 men out of that furnace, and they walked out their own power. And it said not one single hair of their head was singed. And it said not even the faintest hint of smoke could be found on their clothes. God was with them in the midst of the fire. Even the king noticed that when he looked in there. He said there were only 3 originally, but I see a 4th one. And he looks like a son of God. He looks like a divine being, maybe an angel or something. God was there with them in the fire the whole time. And you know what? I'll promise you, if you choose to stand firm in your convictions for the Lord, if you refuse to bow down to the gods of this world, if you refuse the defilements of the flesh, God is going to be with you through that the whole time as well. He'll see you through. He'll be right there with you. You got to understand, though, these young men were serious when they said, even if he doesn't spare me, I'm still not going to do this. So we have to understand that as well today. We might find ourselves in a predicament that God, you know, he won't save us from. They knew they could have died that day. God might not have spared their physical life, but they knew they were going to be saved spiritually if they stayed true to him. And we can know that too. We may find ourselves in a tough spot. We may even have to lose our life to serve God. But if we stay true to him, he's going to be there with us through the fire, through the storms, through the turmoil, and he's going to save us eternally if we do that. If we're just faithful to him. You can go ahead and pick up your songbooks. We're going to sing number 603. Give you an opportunity to obey the gospel this morning, to put Jesus on in baptism, to make that commitment, to start that today like these young men did. You know, they started that at one point in their lives as well. They didn't just wake up one day with this kind of conviction. They had to make that commitment at one point in their life. Let me ask you this, last question. What do you think it was that made these young men of such higher quality than all of the rest of the people in the realm of King Nebuchadnezzar? Was it their youth? You know, we really value youth in our society, don't we? It points out that they were young men. Was it their beauty? Talked about how good looking they were. They were good looking guys. Was it that they were vegetarians? They only ate vegetables and drank water. I got to tell you, I don't think it was any of those things, really. Those were just nice additions to their life. That was a little gravy on top. You know what was really the key point to these men's lives that made them so excellent is that they were godly men. They utilized the wisdom that God had instilled within them. They were uncompromising in their principles. They were unrelenting with the truth. They were exceptional boys who grew to be exceptional men because they had strong faith in an exceptional God. That's it. And if you are the kind of person who can commit your life to the Lord and have complete and total trust and faith in Him and are willing to obey Him and follow Him no matter what the cost on this earth, you're just going to be 10 times better for having done so. Are you ready to make that commitment today? If you haven't done that, we can help you do it. We can baptize you into Christ this morning. We can pray for you if you need some help with anything spiritual in your life. We can pray with you. We can study with you. Anything we can do to help you this morning, you come up here and talk to me about those things while we're standing and singing to your encouragement.